Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5, for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 19, delivered on October 31, 2017. The title of this lecture is Risk and Return.
Tonight, Risk and Return. This is the beginning of some heavy, towards the end of the semester material, crucial for your second exam, of course, and for the final exam. And here's where we get to the heart of what distinguishes finance from its overlying discipline, economics, and what distinguishes finance largely from accounting in a material way. I'm going to start with more informal terminology and then use that to explain how we model risk, and then from there give you more formal terms. The first way I'm going to distinguish two types of risk is to call one type of risk common risk and the other type of risk independent risk. And here's how I'll do it. You, sir, you decide that you are going to build a house in Florida along the coast. And so that means that, of course, you are subject to the winds of hurricanes. But really, there's only a 1% chance that your house is going to be damaged by a hurricane. Really. I mean, it's not that usual for a hurricane to slap a house. And you, sir, decide that you're going to buy your dream home, a house trailer, in Decatur. Indeed, living the dream. Now, there's a 1% chance that your house will be robbed in a given year. Okay? So you both have the same probability of exposure to risk. He, damage to his house. You, that gang of midget clowns who break in and steal your Elvis plate collection. Right? I mean, it's just, I mean, they have no decency whatsoever. You see, so we would think of probability, 1%, 1%, same risk. But they are not the same, you see, because in your case, sir, you built that house in Florida. And everyone along that housing division in Florida, along that coastline, if a hurricane hits, it's going to hit all of them at once. The hurricane's just going to come like giant Cthulhu coming out of the sea and slap everyone with its tentacles, and then you're going to go back into the sea. You, sir, well, I mean, they're not going to hit every house. They'll hit your house in your neighborhood, and then those dastardly fiends will probably drive over to Springfield and hit a house there. But how many houses can they steal the Elvis plates from in 1 year? I ask you that. They're midgets, for God's sake. They can't move that fast. Although they do have a Prius that they all get into. Real problems for real people. You see, there's a fundamental difference between these types of risk. Because in the one case, in the case of the Florida home, there is a common risk of damage. In the case of the midget clowns stealing your Elvis plates, your risk is independent of the risk of others in your neighborhood. Okay, so that makes for a fundamental difference, and it's important for us to probe this difference because it has great meaning in everything from finance of investments to insurance to even even things like something you might not expect, how a choir sounds or how an orchestra sounds. You see, this common risk would be a very different thing to protect against, because you can't keep everyone safe from the hurricane. Now, sure, we can move him out of there, but at the same time, the damage is going to be done to the house. This, I mean, we could insure this one guy and everyone else, and we would not be exposed to a massive payout from the event itself. In the case of the home in Florida, the insurance company is going to just get whacked if it does happen, even 1% of the time. It's going to be a phenomenal loss that has to be covered. And so what we have here is something that is important in finance. You see, businesses have their own risks. You, madam, run a business, and you try a project, and it fails spectacular. I mean, it's just amazing how big this failure was. This was just a disaster. You see, that's not going to happen to every business. While you had a disaster, you, madam, you were doing fine with your project. You were doing fine with yours. You were doing fine with yours. Yours, it should have failed because it was a stupid idea, but somehow everyone loved it. You know, and that happens. We say, oh, that's never going to work. Oh, it worked? Okay. So you see, and then the next year you come back, you're doing great. Lessons learned, you get a new product on the market, everything's great. And then it is you, sir, your business, that has an absolute catastrophe of a project happen. Independent risks, you see. Those, if I take enough of you on in stock, buy stock of your companies, one down, many up. Some down, others up. They will cancel each other's risk out. They are independent risks that I can diversify away. However, all of those businesses are subject to the forces that are beyond their control, the macro economy, the interest rate environment, the business, the consumer buying mood, things that they independently, they can have completely different management styles, completely different products and all that, and they will all still go down in the recession. And then during the recovery, all the rising tide will lift all of the boats. That is a common risk. So when we talk about stock, we talk a lot about diversification. Now, I'm going to ask you, sir, a personal question. No, you. A personal question. Do you sing in the shower? Yes, you do. I do, too. My favorites are old-time gospel hymns, you know. But, you see, I'm pretty sure, and please don't take this badly, you can't sing. I mean, you are really bad. No. You see, you have had dogs commit suicide hearing you sing. You had flocks of birds flying away, and people looked up, oh, something bad's happening. Okay? You may be smiling, but I know for a fact that you can't sing either. And you, madam, oh my God, it's almost as bad as Nicki Minaj. But you see, you all have different bad. You can't hit the high notes. You can't do the low notes. You can't do hardly any notes. But if we put all of you together, suddenly you sound good. If any of you are in the Christmassy kind of thing, they have this annual thing where just thousands and thousands of people get together in this great chapel and they sing Handel's Messiah. You know, hallelujah. And it sounds incredible. But I'll bet you almost everyone singing individually sounds terrible. But when you put them together, it sounds incredible. Orchestras operate on the same principle. A large orchestra can have glitches and flaws in the note renditions and in some of the some things that happen, but you don't hear them because it is overwhelmed by the mass of all of them together. There's a wonderful YouTube video that was done some years, more than a few years ago, in which these researchers recorded individual crickets chirping. You know, that brr, 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 brr. That was when it got eaten by a bird. Then they recorded a huge field of crickets, and then they slowed it down by 2/3. It sounded like one of the most magnificent orchestra symphonies you will ever hear in your life. It's just staggering what it sounds like. That's one of the important things about this idea of common risk and versus independent risk. Okay, independent risks, if you get enough of them together, the risk goes away. This is a principle in insurance, you see. Because if I insure just a couple of people for their health, I'm going to be making some staggering payouts. But if I put many, many people together in an insured pool, what happens is that when you, sir, are having your first heart attack, you are doing really well. That time when you go through that midlife crisis you're inevitably going to have, my good friend, well, I mean, you're not going through anything like that. You're cruising. You get a really bad case of acne. You don't now. How do you do that? You don't have acne. Anyway, okay, look, you get a bad case of acne. Well, you are clear as still smooth. You are going to cancel out each other's independent risk, independent sicknesses. This is one of the most important things about large insurance pools. You have to have large numbers of people. And it was interesting that many years ago, there was this belief in insurance companies that cherry pick. We're going to pick only certain types of people, certain ethnicities, certain age groups, because then that's how we're going to get our risks down. Well, that wasn't. That was stupid, because what they were actually doing was they were loading all their risk. All of these guys were going to have their heart attacks at the same time. They were going to have their babies at the same time. All of these families were. That was the stupidest thing in the world. Get large numbers of people, ethnically diverse, racially diverse, different backgrounds, different income levels, and then you begin to really get the cancellation effect of the independent risks happening. It works. Now, in stocks and bonds, when you build a portfolio, the more stocks you put into it, the more they will cancel each other's independent risks. The more they'll cancel each other's independent risks. In stock terminology, independent risks, let me go with the common risk first. The common risk that remains, that all of the companies are exposed to together, the common risk we call systematic risk. Because it is in the system itself. Systematic risk is risk that cannot be removed by adding more securities to the portfolio, because they all carry this risk. As opposed to independent risk, which we call non-systematic risk. It is the risk that can be reduced by increasing the number of securities in the portfolio. These are what this is wonderful questions to ask on an exam. Another way to, we another term a term that we use for systematic risk is non-diversifiable risk. In other words, by diversifying the portfolio, you can't get rid of it. It's there. It is what we expect to be rewarded for bearing. This is what the market gives us the chance to make money off from. As opposed to non-systematic risk, which we call diversifiable risk. Because by adding more stocks to the portfolio, by diversifying the portfolio, you can make this one go away. You will not get rewarded. You should not expect a reward for bearing diversifiable risk, because that is stupid risk. That's risk that you don't have to take. You buy a single stock. Well, and it does well. Well, you're going to be the one who brags that you did that, but the 10,000 people who got their clocks clean doing that aren't going to say a word. That's irresponsible investing. However, in your youth, fine. Go buy a couple of stocks. I heard a good thing about this stock, so that's what the one I'm going to buy. But once you become more responsible as a financial planner, as a financial manager, or even as the breadwinner of a family, you start thinking about why are you doing something that is not going to win you anything and could get you killed in the market. Give you an example, Microsoft. If I'm not mistaken, in Microsoft as a stock, as one stock in a portfolio, I believe it's 60% of the total risk of the stock is diversifiable. You don't have to be taking that risk. You put that into a portfolio of stocks, and it goes away slowly. Now, how many stocks did it take to really get rid of a lot of the diversifiable risk? Okay, technically, the only portfolio that would have zero, exactly zero, diversifiable risk, non-systematic risk, the only portfolio that would actually have zero would be this theoretical animal called the market portfolio. The market portfolio would be a hypothetical portfolio of all of the stocks in the world. Each one in the portfolio has a weight the same as its market cap weight in the entire world. It would be, that'd be millions and millions of stocks. It can't be done, really can't. However, we can shake out a lot. The old rule of thumb is 30 stocks in a portfolio will put out about 90-95% of the risk, the diversifiable risk. You can shake out a lot of it. Now, if you go on in finance and take one of my more advanced courses, I will show you that there are actually ways to make it even, to create almost a replica of the market portfolio by putting together about four very efficient portfolios. There's a theorem in finance, a portfolio of efficient portfolios is an efficient portfolio. Sounds almost redundant, but it's surprising. You put together four well-diversified portfolios, each of them still holding some of that non-systematic risk. You put those together, and man, you're getting close to what a true market portfolio would do. And there are a couple of other tricks I'm going to tell you tonight, too, very briefly. But the next thing that I would want to go into, well, here's the thing. You got to be careful about how you're going to do this, though. If you're going to put together your own well-diversified portfolio, first thing you're going to have to do is put in about 30 stocks, but it's not quite that easy. You also have to find stocks that are poorly correlated with each other. In other words, they don't move together. You want stocks that counter each other. Now, I think I showed you this earlier in the semester, but I'm going to show it to you right now. The asset correlation, you can find, if you're looking at stocks, you go to this asset correlation webpage called portfoliovisualizer.com/asset-correlations. Again, portfoliovisualizer.com/asset-correlations. And there you can key in ticker symbols of stocks you're thinking of putting into your portfolio and see how they're correlated. Now I'm just going to throw in some off the top of my head. Target, Netflix, NFLX, some popular ones, Kroger, maybe. Put in Aon Insurance, put in Amazon, AMZN. Anyone got any others? Really? What is that? FB. And I'm going to go, let's say, 01, really? 01/01/2015. On through to right now, today, the 30th, let's do the 30th of October. Daily return, 60 days of trading. View the correlation setup. Okay, here we go. Notice, for example, that Target and Netflix have a very low correlation. They work together very well in a portfolio. A 0.11 is really good. Because it's really bad, the correlation. On the other hand, look at Target against Kroger. Ouch. At 0.39, that's not good. Those two would not cancel out each other's diversifiable risk very well. Going on, and sometimes you can figure out why two stocks are not correlated or are correlated. Sometimes it's just kind of like a mystery. This one's pretty obvious. Aon, which is a reinsurer, against Kroger, well, of course they're not going to be, they're a completely different industry, so you're going to have a low correlation. Facebook against Kroger, again, they don't really do anything in common, so you're going to expect there to be a low correlation with those. On the other hand, Facebook against Amazon? Ow! That's just stupidly high. What's your cutoff? You have to find your own. For me, I wouldn't look at anything above a 0.29. In other words, 0.3 and above, I'm out. Ideally, I like to see 0.25 or below on my correlations. Target against Aon, that's in my range, 0.27. Target against Amazon. Really? That's amazing. Look at that. That one actually surprises me. But, I mean, because the consumers at Amazon would seem to be very similar to the consumers at Target. But they're not, it doesn't affect their stock returns. Remember, these are correlating stock returns. Yeah, it's something to look at. Amazon against Kroger, interestingly, of course. Facebook against Kroger. So there's a good way to shape what you're thinking of putting into a portfolio. One thing that is absolutely critical to building a portfolio, and now I'm taking you into the world of investments, which you would get more of this if you were in my classes that were higher up. Don't buy stocks based on sentiment or personal feelings. Well, I shop at Target all the time, so I'm going to buy Target stock. Stupidest reason in the world to buy Target stock. Do not do that. Look, you don't buy stock on a tip from a friend or, oh, I hear that people really love working for this company, so I'll buy their stock. Or this company loves Mother Earth. Blink, 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 bat, bat, bat the eyes. I want a green company. Good for you. Don't do that in your investments. That is a sure way to get yourself really hurt. when you let your sentiments, well, I don't like this company because of its political leanings. Don't do that. It's just asking for you to bias your portfolio's investments away from an objective consideration. Now, if you don't like this company, by all means, go and throw paint on... don't do that. By all means, protest on Facebook. Yeah, that'll teach them a lesson. But at the same time, make your investments objective. And I don't like to say that because there are reasons ethically why you shouldn't invest in companies. But at the same time, you do that all the time, you start shaping your life that way, you're going to find out that it's a very bad road as far as the returns on your investment goes. And as I said, you will eventually have to be responsible for more than yourself. Whether you're a financial planner, manager, or anything like that, you'll still be investing for a family, most likely. And that means that you've got to take into consideration more objectivity in your investment decisions. So don't buy stocks just because you like the company, or because you shop at that company, or because you've heard good things about that company from some talking head on a financial news network. Those guys are on there because they can't do it in the real world, so they talk about it. If they could, they'd be sitting on an island in the Bahamas sipping pina coladas. Little advice for you from an old cynic. Okay, now, so how do you invest? So what would be good investment strategy? Now, the first one that I brought up, of course, I've already told you, buy 30 stocks, 30 or more stocks that are of low correlation. Portfolio, this is falls under the title portfolio construction. Portfolio construction. Now, the first way I said was one, buy at least 30 securities, stocks, or bonds. And remember that you can have bonds in your portfolio too, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit here. Stocks with low correlations, correlation coefficients. The problem there, of course, is that that's transaction fees out the wazoo. Buying that many, and it would take a lot of money because normally you buy stocks in round lots. In other words, 100 shares. So that would be a hellaciously expensive portfolio, and buying it, you're going to pay commissions. Well, I use a no-commission broker. You think about that. How is it that there are these places out there that are letting you buy and sell stocks without any commission whatsoever? You ought to be careful about that. There's an old saying, if you are not the buyer, you are the product. Same goes with social media. They are using what you're doing to profile you. They're not doing it for free. They're not rich doing something out of the love of their hearts. You go with a good broker that's going to execute the trades and all that. You don't have to have a broker who gives you advice, although that's a good idea sometimes, to get someone who's actually seasoned professional. But it's going to be expensive to do this. If not, if for no other reason, then you're going to have to pay a lot of money to build a portfolio that massive. The next way is through what are called mutual funds. Mutual funds, and what you would want to do is you would want to buy a no load or a low load. In other words, you don't pay to play. You just put your money in, and then you're on your way with the portfolio. Now, mutual funds are essentially, and this is kind of a simplified description, they are a collection of securities, stocks, bonds. You can choose a mutual fund, whatever flavor you want. There's something for you. High growth, no dividend, dividend paying, invested in mid-cap companies, invested in small cap, invest in international companies, invest in industrial or energy companies or green companies. You can find a portfolio. You can find a mutual fund for any taste you want. And you can pick one that has the beta that you want. It is pre-diversified by the financial managers of the fund. They're out there. They have market power. They can buy at a lot better prices than you can. And they can have influence with the company's direction by saying, look, we love this company. It's in a couple of our mutual funds. We really want you to stay on track with what you're doing. You can't do that. You call the company, they're going to put you to the person that they hire to talk to the loony people. And they really do have that kind of person. For some reason, I've been put with them quite a few times. But anyway, mutual funds are a great way to invest because you've got instant portfolio diversification. However, the downside of a mutual fund is that you can trade it only a certain number of times a year, say 4 times a year. So once you have set your mutual fund preferences, you can't squirm out of it until a window opens again. It's not like stock. You can't call someone up and say, I want to sell. You're stuck with it until the next cycle. Now, typically, my advice for people is to don't buy just one mutual fund. Super diversify yourself. Super diversify. So in other words, what I would do is I would buy a couple of different funds and maybe one stock, one bond fund, and a cash fund. Now, in finance, when we say cash in this context, we're probably meaning treasury securities. They're a highly liquid, absolutely, virtually zero risk. It's cash. So when I say a cash fund, you would be buying a mutual fund that buys treasury bills or treasury instruments. So the way I would recommend that you do it is you would buy a fund that was, the securities were stocks, a fund where the securities are bonds, and a fund that was a cash fund. And then, if you are seeing good times ahead, you probably would want to do something like, if it's a really good economy, you might do 80% stocks, 10% bonds, let me say 15% bonds, and then 5% of your cash would be of your money would be going into the cash fund. And then, as the economy began to turn south in your judgment, at your trading opportunity, you would reallocate to put. Oh, by the way, mutual funds have one nice thing about them. If they're stock funds, the companies that pay dividends, those just get rolled back into your holdings in the mutual fund. So on its own, if you've got a mutual fund that has dividend-paying stocks in it, they just roll back into the fund. So anyway, now stocks, if times are getting a little bit dodgy, you might want to say, okay, let's go this way. I'm going to go down to 60% stocks, maybe put myself 30% bond fund, and then in the cash fund, I might pull it up to 10%, something like that. Becoming more defensive. Notice that I am not losing my water here. Even though times are going south, I'm still going to stick to the equities. Now, if things get really, really sour, I'd probably move somewhere this way, something like maybe 35% stocks, 60% bonds, and then move 15% to the cash fund. And in this way, over time, I just manage essentially a portfolio of three portfolios and use my best judgment. Now remember, when times get bad, I mean, they can get really bad, you should not panic. The people, look, the 2008 crash was as severe as any stock market crash you could want to see, that you would really ever care to see. The people who sold out as the hurricane was coming, well, they sold out near the bottom. And when they bought back in, they bought back in when stock prices were recovering. That was the worst thing in the world. The people who just sat and wrote it out didn't move their positions much. They moved them some, but they kept their positions pretty tight. They went down and they went back up. They are literally multiples in returns ahead of the people who tried to react to the down current. Hold yourself in position. Don't let anything rout you. Markets are that way. It's the same thing in combat. You get the enemy to stop thinking clearly. They're going to scatter, and then you will kill them as they run. That's just how it works. I shouldn't be talking about this to you guys. What the heck? But it's the reality of existence. Hold your water. Stay frosty. In the hurricane, don't scatter like the crowd. Stand your ground, and you will get through it a lot better. So it'd be only in a really bad market that I would adjust down to 35% stocks. Because, and clearly this is flight to quality. I'm following the flight out of the risky securities. But it has to get pretty serious for that. And keeping some in cash, that's just so you have some quick money. As a matter of fact, some of these mutual funds, they even have something that's sort of like a checking account. You can write checks against your cash position in these. I wouldn't recommend you do it, but it's there. Now, as far as mutual funds go, they have trading symbols. They have ticker symbols. I'll show you. I'll pull up a couple here that are the big funds. There are these overlying companies, Vanguard, Fidelity, and each one of these offers a whole cabinet full of different funds that you can invest in, join in. So the Vanguard Total Stock Market, that's a widely diversified. Now let me show you this one. Let's have a look at this. Control-C, and now I'm going to go to finance.yahoo.com with that trading symbol, okay? And put that one in. There you go. Look at the beta. It's almost exactly the market. It's a huge, widely diversified fund. And this would be great. If you just want to ride with the market, this would be a good place to go for a stock fund. Let me show you one that's a bond fund. AGG. Really? Oh, yeah. Again, notice how close it is to a market portfolio as far as risk goes. Now, this one's a bond fund, if you're a bond type of person. Has about the risk of the market, and it's pretty cool. It's a nice one. And notice the one day is kind of scary. Let's look at it over 5 years. Now, see how this bond fund, it doesn't really go very much because it's bonds. Remember how I told you the bond market is not sexy? See it right there? It just kind of wobbles around. It's almost like it's mean reverting. Look at that. I mean, that's a bond fund. I was kind of curious about that stock fund. I should have looked at that one. Yeah, see? Look, let's go to a five. Yeah, there's the 5 year on the Vanguard Total Stock, VITSX. See this one? See how it's going up? And notice how smooth it is. Do you see that smoothness in it? That's the diversification. Those wobbles in there, that jerking up and down, that is almost all systematic risk. It's not any whipsaws from independent risks the diversifiable risks. And notice it trends upward, you know, losing its cool there for a while, but see if you just held on, if you didn't freak out, do you see how it just came back? That's exactly what I was telling you about. It don't lose your cool in a downstroke. And if you held on to this and you didn't pull out of it, well, you would have been fine in the long run. But most people, amateurs especially, they freak out and they run for the hills at the first hint of a downturn. But if you held on, it'll fix itself. It will. That's the way it is. The sun always rises, even after a disaster. Okay? So, this gives you a little idea. And back here, just to come back a little bit. Here are some of the nice ones. By the way, these are just some, the gainers and losers you can look at, fun categories. Looking at metals. Now, let me show you something about metals. Hang on here. Here are a couple of metals. I want to show you something interesting. See if I can find one real fast here. I think this one is actually what I want, but I'm probably going to be making an ass of myself here because I can't see the symbol really. Oh, come on. Look at the beta. Do you see it? Yeah. That's a negative beta. These are called contrarian funds. Metals are famous for being contrarian funds. In other words, they move against the market. This one moves at double the market in the opposite direction. Isn't that an interesting thing? And so if you are a cynical old SOB and you think that the whole world is going to hell in a handbasket, well, a contrarian fund is the way you go. Look at that beta. You see, I don't talk about betas less than zero. But there he is. I found, this was a spectacular example. A beta of negative 1.99 on UFPSX. Wow. And you'll find that in metals, mutual fund metals. So if you want to rock against the market, you want to throw your dice that everything's going to go to hell and all that kind of stuff, buy mutual funds that are a contrarian. In other words, they have negative betas. And you can do that. And I don't recommend. Look at the yield. You see that yield? Now there's your damn yield right there. 0.00%. Yeah. And your last dividend was a whopping 8 cents a share. Moving on from that, those are mutual funds. The upside is that you've got no transactions costs on them, highly diversified. The downside is that you can trade out only a limited number of times a year. Okay? So that's the mutual fund approach. I really recommend it for a lot of investors because you are essentially buying into the power of the Wall Street boys. You join that one of those Vanguard or Fidelity or one of those funds, CREF fund, TIA, CREF fund, something like that, you are in the Wall Street League. Because they represent your interests. Now, let me take you to the last one. That was 2. I don't know why I wrote a 3 there. 3. Electronically traded funds. Electronically traded funds. These are ETFs. Now, ETFs are stocks. They are equities. You buy and sell them just like any stock, anytime, day or night. Now, this is a really not a very good description, but imagine a company, and all the company is nothing but a portfolio of stocks. That's all it is. And then that company that is a portfolio of stocks sells stock in itself. Again, that is really pushing it. But that's basically what you got going on there. And you can buy and sell them anytime. So unlike mutual funds, you have no trading limits. Now, think about it this way. Madam, at 11 o'clock, you ate a really bad pizza. Okay? Now, we're not talking bad. We're talking bad. You didn't realize that when you said everything, they were going to put everything on the pizza, including anchovies. And that abomination hated by God himself, pineapple, on the pizza. Seriously. You didn't know what you were doing. You just ate it, and then you wake up at 2 o'clock and you say, oh my God, I've got to call my broker and trade some ETFs. Ring, ring.
Hello.
Yeah, I want to buy some ETFs. Did you eat that pizza again? Yeah. Okay, how many ETFs do you want to buy? So in other words, this is for the people who just can't help themselves. When they are just feeling the mood, they want to trade stocks. You just got dumped by your girlfriend of 3 years. She dumped you for an athlete named Sven from Sweden. You're sitting there in your sad apartment. You're listening to Barry Manilow, I am ready to take a chance again. And that tells you that you have to call your broker and buy some ETFs. Ready to put my money on the line with you. Let me show you some ETFs. Let me show you some ETFs, okay? Hang on. Here's one that's always good to show. Spider! Really? Well, that's suck.com. What happened there? SPY. Oh, there. That is you're buying a stock which is a portfolio of the S&P 500. Now, the S&P 500 constitutes about, in terms of total market cap of the S&P 500 companies, that's 70% of the world's economy. That's a hellacious thing right there. And it's sitting right there. Look at this guy. Look at that SOB. Beta right on the button at 1.00. Perfect market beta. The market portfolio, of course, has a beta of 1. You essentially, by just buying the spiders, you've got the market. I wouldn't recommend you just do this. Remember that this is not the market portfolio. You might want to buy a portfolio, a diversified, maybe buy 4 different ETFs, and those would cover you want them to be independent of each other. One maybe the S&P 500, one a small caps ETF of a wide range of small cap stocks, something like that, mid-range caps, and maybe an international cap. By the way, one quick thing about Security One. True diversification that gets you down closer to common risk, you probably are going to want to start thinking about foreign company stocks too. Now, in the United States, you cannot buy the stock of a foreign company. What you can buy instead is what's called an ADR, an American Depository Receipt, an ADR. This is essentially a security that is purely backed by the stock of the foreign company. So you can't buy this company in stock of this company in Germany that's based in Germany, but you can buy the ADR, which is essentially going to move just like the stock itself. So international diversification is the next step in removing independent risks, because then you're pulling away. If you buy all American companies, really you're going to ride the American economy. If you buy companies that are across the world, then you're getting global diversification. Within your lifetimes, you'll even have companies that are in interplanetary space, mining companies on the asteroids, on the moon. You're going to have companies that are tourism in Earth orbit and in places near Earth. So there will be even that step in your lifetimes. It's almost like I'm talking science fiction, but I'm not. So you got to start thinking about a global, but in your lifetimes, you got to start thinking about something that is post-global. But think about those companies overseas. I already brought this up once, but a few years ago, I took my students, finance students, up to Zurich, a reinsurer. And they gave a really good presentation, gave us some lunch, and really answered a lot of questions. One student in the group, very bright young man, asked him, well, you had a lot of exposure in Japan at the Fukushima reactor, that one that melted down. So you probably really got hit bad. And Zurich officials, they were glib. Yeah, that hit us bad. But we insure reactors all over the world, and all the other ones did very well for us. And we got the premiums, didn't make any payouts across the world. So you have to, this thing, think globally. Yeah, people say that. They don't know what they're talking about. Thinking globally means actually acting on global abilities, global opportunities. So yeah, we insured a reactor that probably made a whole lot of sushi glow, but at the same time, they had reactors all over the world insured that didn't, canceling the independent risks. That's how you do it. So think about that. Now, what was I going to say? Oh, electronically traded funds. The downside is it's a stock. You're going to pay a commission every time you buy or sell. You can buy or sell anytime, unlike a mutual fund. You can pull out of your positions. You can go longer in your positions, whatever you want. But when you do it, there's going to be a commission, the broker's commission. And also, notice, by the way, here. See this spider? See the spider here? $257.15 a share. So you buy a round lot of those. That's $25,715 plus your commissions. And, of course, well, you know, I've looked under the seat of my car for money, and I don't have that. I'm pretty sure. I was lucky to have enough for a double cheeseburger or Burger King. But I want to show you real quick. Over 5 years, look at that smoothness. Again, portfolio diversification. It's real. This isn't theoretical. Well, it is theoretical. I mean, I teach the theory, and I bore people to death with it. But then when I start showing this stuff, look at how smooth it is. That is the cancellation of all independent risks, or almost all of them, and all you get, this is the orchestra of the market itself. And notice that, again, downturn, if you don't lose your cool, if you are not routed by the enemy, which is the bear market, if you just stand firm and keep pushing forward, you're going to do fine in the long run. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.